the Code Newbie podcast, where we talk to people on their coding journey in hopes of helping you on yours. I'm your host, Saran, and today I want to tell you about some of our incredible sponsors, like DigitalOcean. They've got simple cloud hosting built for developers. And for all the Code Newbies who just started learning to code, yes, that means you, they've got one-click solutions for Rails, Django, Node, and much more, so you can launch your app in no time. And if you're looking for full control of your server, they've got that too. And if you use the promo code CODENEWBIE, you can get a $10 credit, so check them out. Today on the show, I'm so excited to have Yuna Kravitz. Did I say that right, Yuna?
Yeah, you did. Nice
job. Awesome. Yes. On the show, she's a front-end developer and designer at IBM Design, among a bunch of other things that she does. Yuna, you want to say hi?
Hi.
So I guess for me, I was surprised that IBM Design was a thing. When I think of IBM, I don't necessarily think of design first. I think of like really hardcore tech. And the fact that there's like a whole design thing was really fascinating. What is that about?
Yeah, it's actually very, very new. And it's an entire movement that's doing a lot to really change the culture of the company. So we are just trying to build up our design sensibilities across all of our products and platforms. So in order to do that, you need to have a large basis to start from and to really start making design an important part of the development process. So that's sort of the basis and idea of what IBM Design is. We're trying to bring that design thinking, that design aesthetic to all of the places that IBM reaches, which is huge. It's a huge company. It's kind of scary how big it is. But we've been working on building the team for sure.
So what kinds of things does IBM do that we might be surprised about?
Well, a fun fact that recruitment likes to say is that 84% of the world's like financial systems, like when you use a cash register, go through IBM systems.
Huh.
That's a big number.
Yeah.
So that's a little like fun fact. Shout out to IBM.
So as a front-end developer there, what kinds of things do you get to work on?
So I work mostly on making prototypes of these designs that we create. And it tends to be a lot of the next generation of what the products that we already have will become, and also just how we can make those products better through user-centric thinking. So as a front-end developer, what I do is I work with the designers and design researchers, as well as the back-end engineers, and sort of mesh those worlds. And it's very much the bridge position where I'm writing front-end code, production code that brings in the designers' aesthetic, as well as makes it easy for the back-end developers to use that code when they put it into the product.
So it's redesigning different iterations or different versions of existing products. Is that a big part of it?
Yeah. And one great thing about working at such a big company is that we do have budget for testing with users. And having those sort of prototypes for them to test is also really important.
So how do you know when an app or a product needs to be redesigned? How do you know when it's ready for a new look and maybe a new way of working as well?
Well, there's so many little agile startups out there. And in order to compete in this market, you have to create something new and innovative. It's not about when is something ready. It's about why not? Why isn't it better? How can you constantly be pushing it forward? How can you make it a little bit easier for users? It's very, very user focused. So sort of the crux of design thinking is you start with this, these hills, like things that you want someone to be able to achieve. And then you go into ideation and prototyping. And there's a lot of divergent and converging thinking where you come together, you discuss the idea, and then you diverge and you talk about different ways and solutions that you could solve it. And you come back to sort of discuss those. So trying not to silo something in terms of one product and sort of thinking in terms of what are all the options that we can create that will help make this even better.
So that is a very like lean, quick, iterative way of thinking. And I'm wondering how easy is it to do that and to work at that speed when you're in such a large corporation like IBM?
That's a really good question. So what IBM Design also really strives to do is create a much smaller team-focused approach to designing products that the rest of IBM doesn't have yet, but it's getting there. So we're sort of like the incubator and the push into this. The design team is obviously just a small part of IBM, but because we're broken up into teams of, it really depends, but usually around 5 to 10 people, we get to really have the benefit of having those small, agile sort of iterations of product cycles and then push those out to the rest of the bigger corporation.
So I'd love to hear a day in the life of Yuna, if you don't mind. Tell us about a recent project that, if you can speak about it, a recent project that you worked on and what it looked like to be a front-end developer on that project.
Well, a day in life involves a lot of coffee, for sure. So when I get to work, I guess I'll start there. Definitely coffee in the morning. But it starts
Wait,
usually,
how do you take your coffee?
I do it black.
Really?
So I never That's did so black hardcore. Coffee until I did paleo. And then I love the paleo diet. I don't do it anymore. I need to get back on it. But I just got used to it. And now I can't really go back to creaming my coffee.
Interesting. Do you feel that way about, like, so do you not do lattes either? You just kind of do straight
Well,
espresso?
I do lattes with almond milk. I like almond milk a lot, but I don't know. I got used to almond milk now and I really like the taste of it. So going back to normal milk is just kind of weird for me. I'll do it once in a while. I'm not lactose intolerant. I just enjoy the taste more.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so you got your coffee. Then what happens?
All right, I got my coffee, usually iced black coffee. I walk into my office, say hi to everyone. Everyone's super friendly. I love my team. Like, I really love my team. So I currently work on the Bluemix team, which is IBM's like platform as a service, which it's sort of like Heroku. It allows you to sort of deploy your app onto our platform. And a recent project that I was working on there is I'll talk about the last project I work on, because that was really iterative with a lot of my coworkers. So we're kind of trying to figure out how to redesign the pattern library of Bluemix. Like, how can we create some sort of unified design system that everyone can use? So that involves CSS, HTML, JavaScript for all of our really like modular components and assets that are involved in the product. And this is really an ongoing project, because first you have to decide what is the structure of this pattern library. And then you have to figure out, how can we constantly be getting feedback to and from the products that are using it and building with it and extending on it? So it involved a lot of meetings with the other front-end developers, trying to gather the assets that we had. There was definitely a lot of decisions that had to be made about how we can organize this thing. So Slack was great. We used that a lot to sort of make the decisions, send articles back and forth, debating. So there would be meetings, then there would be time when I would spend focused on the task at my computer, trying to build out these modules and these components. And there was also time spent doing emails and all this administrative stuff. So I guess a day in life just involves a mix of all those things tied together with coffee and lunch.
So we had Christy Tillman from Society of Grownups on a few weeks ago. And one thing that she talked about was the importance of engaging your users, right? Talking to customers as much as possible. And I wanted to know, in your process, how many users do you talk to for a given feature? Or maybe it's a given product. And how do you know when you've gathered the data that you need to then make a decision on it?
Well, it depends on the project, really. This one, I definitely got a lot of dissenting opinion. And the people that I were talking to was mostly internal developers, because it was sort of for us to use and then to send out. But I know that our design researchers do a lot more than that. And they go out into the Austin community and they find developers and they sit them down and do real user tests and just see how they interact with products. So I don't really know how to answer a number-wise thing. But for me, I just talked to as many front-end developers that I could reach that were sort of in the vicinity and people that I could message on Slack.
Yeah. And I feel like that it was easier because it was an internal project too, right? You don't have to kind of figure out, well, where did these people hang out? They hang out next to you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I know that our design researchers, they go out into the co-working spaces pretty often. And that's where they really find developers who have a lot of different backgrounds, but are all having the same goal, which is just trying to build cool things together.
Yeah. So you are definitely a designer and you're definitely a front-end developer. Does that make you a unicorn?
I used to love that word, but now I hate it. So I have a little poster on my wall from when I was in kindergarten that's an acronym of my name, which is Yuna. U was for unicorn. N was for New Year's, my fave holiday, fave with the F-A-V-E. And A was for awesome. And now I feel like that's not original anymore.
So, you know, you started the unicorn idea. That's basically what I'm hearing.
And I would love to say that. I would love it.
But how do you feel about the concept of a unicorn? Do you think that's a legitimate expectation, or maybe it's, you know, not an expectation because people don't believe that that exists? How do you feel about that?
I think it's really, really hard to find someone who is really excellent at both design and development. And me, when I first finished school and I went into work, I wanted to get a job specifically that I could do both. I love design and I really, really like development. And working at IBM Design, that was an opportunity to do both. But then as I started working there, I realized I don't really do any design anymore. I don't really want to do design anymore. And so I was able to sort of like pick my path. And now I just code all day and I love, 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 love it. So I don't know. I think I'll always have that design aesthetic whenever I do something. And the project that I'm working on now is very, very like design heavy, but only in the browser. I haven't opened a single design program. I've just been doing it straight in the browser.
Wow. So you don't do mockups or wireframes or any of that? You just go straight to code?
I sometimes will draw on a sticky note, like an idea, and that's like my sketch. And I think sticky notes are great for that because they're super versatile and you can move them around, especially if you're creating like modular components. But not for this project.
So when you use the sticky note, because I don't think I've heard of that actually. Are you doing the whole mockup on a single sticky note, or you're making a mockup using sticky notes?
It depends. So if I'm working on the pattern library, which involves a lot of modular components. So let's say we have cards and sidebars and a search bar. Those are all going to be separate components. But if I'm doing a layout, that's probably just going to be on one really quickly, a little toss out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's neat. Because for me, I've learned that when I'm looking at, you know, an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper and trying to sketch a layout on that, it's just too much. Like there's too much space. There's too many decisions. It just feels too overwhelming. But if I confine my sketch to a much smaller part of that, then it just becomes a lot easier.
Yeah. The first blog post that I ever wrote, like ever years ago, was about sketchnote wireframing. And the idea was that, note card wireframing. So you have a note card and it's the perfect size to do a wireframe of a mobile interface. And on the back, you have lined paper so you can describe what you see on the front. And that allows you to arrange your screens in certain ways that you can go from one action to another. If you had some kind of sidebar pop in, you can physically move that around and see how that feels. It was a good way to have some kind of visual as well as some description. Yeah, I haven't really used it since, but I don't know. I still think it's a good idea.
Yeah. I like that. I'm going to have to find that blog post and put it up on the show notes.
Oh, God, don't do that. It's so old. Oh, man.
So you said you don't really design anymore and you don't want to. Why is that?
I just fell in love with development. I do like designing, but I like designing things that are more sort of strange and artistic. Like I really like doing crafts and hand drawing and creating physical things and painting and doing artsy things. And I also really love development and solving logical puzzles and figuring out the most performant way to build something and to serve it to a browser. But that spot in between, like the layout design, the graphic design, is not my favorite thing. Don't know why.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So going back to this idea of a unicorn and how hard it is to find someone who can both do design and do coding, why do you think that combination is so rare?
I think it takes a lot of work to do either well. And it's easy to find people who will call themselves unicorns. It's easier to find people who can do both decently. But if you want to really, really deep dive and become an expert at something, I feel like it takes so much time. And it takes a lot of your effort and just your heart, putting your heart into it. So it's really hard to find someone who can do both effectively. I'm not saying it's impossible. I absolutely believe there are people out there who are extremely talented, who do both fluently. But at least in my experience, you can't devote that much of yourself and still have a life to something that's so widespread.
That makes sense. So let's talk about how you got started. How did you learn design and how did you learn to code?
It all started because I wanted to be a fashion designer. It sounds so silly when I say it now.
That's perfectly legitimate.
Yeah, no, it's very true though. I used to love drawing little dresses and doing fashion illustrations on the sides of my notebooks. I'm talking like elementary school. I had a magazine that I called UNA Magazine that that's I awesome. Did a monthly edition of and passed around the classroom because that's how much I loved it. So
that is the cutest thing I've ever heard. How many pages was your magazine?
It was pretty legitimate. It was probably like 15 to 20 pages. And some editions were colored. Well, some pages were colored. And always the cover.
Special editions.
Yeah. And I would have people do like polls in there and stuff. That's so awesome. It was legit. but when I got to high school, I took a media design class, like intermedia design was what it was called. And I was introduced to this really magical thing called the Wacom tablet. And I was able to take the sketches that I could do on paper and put them onto a computer and do really fluid like digital art and painting and adding effects and textures and grunge. And I loved the Wacom tablet. And in that class, I just really, really enjoyed it. So we ended up doing a lot of Flash and I learned ActionScript 2.0. Nice. And that was my first programming language. And one of the first things that I made was like this drag and drop cartoon doll thing. Mm-hmm. So that was like mind-blowing to me. I could make something in Flash nonetheless that let you drag and drop clothes onto a doll. That I could code that. I could click on a element and give it some kind of script and code it, and it worked. And solving those sorts of problems just was like mind-blowing to me. I was so excited about it. So I just really fell in love with coding. This was high school, yeah. Wow. End of high school.
So what happened after that? Did you end up studying it in college or just did it in your free time? How did that work?
So I went into college doing graphic design as a major, as a double major with computer science. And I ended up going to a school that was a political science school, had nothing to do with graphic design or computer science at all. It's American University in Washington, D.C. So my programs were tiny. The design program in total with print design and with interactive design was 18 people, and interactive design was 9 people. So I graduated with 9 people. Yeah, it was tiny.
Is that good or bad? Because I feel like you can get a lot of attention with such small groups, but does that also mean the university didn't invest too much into those programs?
I thought it was a good thing. It does show that the university does not invest in design and computer science at that university at all. But I liked the small class size because you really got to know everyone. And when we graduated, we put Pantone colors on our graduation caps. Every single person in the design program did this because we could. We all knew each other.
Yeah.
So it was like us walking along on the aisle just with these like Pantone colors. Mm-hmm. It was so really cool. Good.
So you graduated from that program. How did you end up at IBM?
So I ended up at IBM because, gosh, it was just such a crazy last year of college. I was doing so many things. I was like running the SaaS meetup and I was trying to just learn everything and be at all the meetups and do all the things. And I was just applying to a bunch of jobs. I saw the IBM job on Dribbble and applied, and I heard about the program they were doing there, and I thought it was really interesting. So I applied and got in. They offered me a job. I moved to Austin. I was very much, life is too short to live in the same city for too long, so I'm always like kind of into new opportunities and new cities. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty happy with it. I'm still happy with it. It's a pretty cool little spot.
That's a great first job, by the way.
Yeah, not
that's
bad.
Pretty incredible. Yeah. So beyond, you know, having studied design and computer science in undergrad, what do you think got IBM excited about you and your resume? You know, what advice do you have for people who are looking into getting a first job? And ideally, at such a great company like IBM, what are some things that they can do as well to be really attractive to employers?
So something that I really like to see in portfolios specifically is a story. Not just saying, this is something I made, here's the final product and the visual, but talking about how you made those decisions and why. So seeing sort of like the UX behind it, the strategy behind it, maybe showing some of your sketches. I know that it was formerly a bad practice to show incomplete work, but I think that's completely changed because employers want to see how you think in your portfolio.
Yeah, that's one thing I've definitely heard a lot is, you know, show me not the end product, which, you know, who knows how much help you got, who knows, you know, how much time you spent on that, but being able to see from the very beginning and seeing all the iterations can be really helpful.
Yeah, and especially noting what part of the project you focused on, if it's a group project, I think that's really important because sometimes people would just show something and list 8 people who worked on it and not really mention what their specific role was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So I want to shift gears and talk about a project that you've been doing for the last year, I believe, your open source personal goals.
Yeah, it's been almost a whole year. It's hard to believe.
Wow. So what is that? What's that about?
So when I first started at IBM, we have this 3-month design camp. And I felt like I wasn't coding enough in it. And I really wanted to do a lot more development and growing myself as a front-end developer. So I kind of took that into my own hands. One of the best pieces of advice that I've gotten has been make things good around yourself. Don't wait for things to become good around you. So Ooh. I just made this entire list of things I wanted to learn. And I threw it up on GitHub because I open source everything. And then I started to really break it down. So it started with things that I want to do, things that I will do this week. And I sort of like picked out from each of the lists. So things include like build something with React.js, try out Reactive, like use Picturefill in my portfolio, try out Polymer in a project. Like things are now like read chapter 3 of You Don't Know JavaScript's closures book, create a Yeoman generator for this other thing that I built. So really started to break things down. And this has evolved since I started it. But it's essentially a task list that I make for things I want to accomplish this week. And then I create a weekly review where I put things that I don't have a time to get to this week, but I want to do next week. And I go through how I did that week. I write up a little summary. And this repo has become really popular. It's kind of crazy. So people are just following like my personal online diary.
Yeah. So how do you pick the things that you want to work on?
Things often come up and I'll realize I don't have time to do them this week, but I don't want to forget. And I know that if I don't write them down, I will forget. So I kind of put that into the next week. Or if I see something on Twitter that sounds really cool or something that I should sort of look into, it seems interesting, I'll add that to my longer list so that I could always go back to it and refer to it. So it was just sort of things that I find from the community that it looks like intelligent people are working on, and I want to know why and how they're doing that. I feel like you can't really judge something before you use it. So like specifically with React, that's something everyone is talking about these days. But I don't want to really have a strong opinion on it until I build something with it myself.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how often do you look at your personal goals and check things off and add things and update them?
Multiple times a day.
Oh, wow.
I created this terminal alias that I just open my terminal and type in a command, which is PGED, which is like personal goals edit. And it opens it in my Vim editor so I could see all of the goals I set for that day. And I can sort of navigate those files. So whenever I have a down moment in a day where I'm just kind of like twiddling my thumbs, I have a list that I can reference where I can be productive instead of just watching Netflix.
Yeah. So how much time do you spend on your personal goals? How much time do you spend perfecting them, adding to them, updating them?
I just add them as I go along. So not that much time, but working on them, I spend most of my days. Mm-hmm. I don't really...
Most of your free time.
Yeah, most of my free time. And so one of the things that I first got as a pull request was from Chris Epstein, who's a fantastic human being and also... the man who sort of like created Compass, which is a really popular SAS extension library. So his first pull request to my personal goals was to spend more time in the sun before summer ends. So it reminded me that I need to add things to there that aren't just development focused, that are life focused. So one of the things I had in there was like sign up for aerial arts classes. Now I'm taking those. Just like reminders to myself that everyone can see.
Yeah. So does that happen very often? Do people make pull requests to add things to your to-do list?
I've gotten a few pull requests. I have 7 contributors right now. And I also built lists for coffee shops in Austin and like books I should read. I have blog post ideas on here, app ideas on here. And I started something called Happy Moments, which was from this year in 2015. Since January 1st, I wrote down 1 happy moment from every single day of my life, no matter how small, just something from that day. And I've kept that up. I since built a like API, like a site scraping tool to read that list. And then it's now a Node module, like a little app that I threw up on Heroku, and all just things from my personal goals list that I wanted to try out. And now it's like a legitimate site that I will release eventually. But
yes, please. And please tell us about it. We'd love to tweet it out and share it out. That sounds awesome. So what are some of your happy moments? What are some of your recent ones?
Oh, man, I will open this. Let's see. So it's things that are like, here's a small one. So I came back to work on July 27th after being at conferences at home for a while. And I wrote like, back to work. Lauren gave me a really cute card and notebook for my birthday today. So little things like that. And then there's really big moments like, oh my gosh, I found out that I'm speaking at CSS Conf Australia. And I was freaking out. I was like, I may or may not have cried after running outside in shorts and jumping around and screaming. So it's kind of become the story of my life this year, which has been a really, really ridiculous year for me.
Yeah. Would you ever do a sad moments or a learning moments?
I tried to keep this positive so that I could go back and just remember the year for all of the positive things that happened. I think that's a really interesting idea to have, like, this was the day of my life. But I keep it a little bit more real in my weekly updates. So in weekly updates, sometimes I say, this was a really hectic week and I need to breathe and I can't say yes to everything anymore. So that's there. But in my personal goals, little happy moments folder, it's all positivity.
Yeah. So I know that a really big thing that many code newbies deal with when they're trying to learn to code is they have all these things that they feel like they should know, and they should know it right now, if not yesterday, and setting up goals and then prioritizing those goals and then keeping up with those goals can be so difficult. And it sounds like you've been doing it pretty well for the last year. What advice do you have for people learning to code who don't have their first job yet and are trying to figure out what to prioritize, when to do what, and how to move forward in that?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I think it's really important to have different levels of goal achievement. So make something bigger, like use Vim and the keyboard more often was one of my goals from this year. And I started doing that in small incremental steps. So learning Vim commands would be one thing, maybe like searching about how to upgrade my Vim theme so I could use it more effectively. I just started really breaking things down. Like another goal was up my JavaScript game. That's huge. JavaScript means so many things these days.
Yeah.
So I like broke that into three smaller things, like JavaScript patterns using Node.io. And then I wrote Angular, but I haven't done Angular since. Cross that out. But breaking that down into sort of just like reading a chapter of a book or creating a GitHub repo to start this Node project. That might be something that you put on your goal for this week. And then maybe next week you might start with create like a to-do MVC with this library I want to try. So just small things like that. Sometimes I put in blog posts that I see and I really want to take the time to focus on and read. But at the point that I see it, I don't have that time just at that moment. So I'll put that into things I'll do this week. So read and internalize an article or watch this video, things like that. And it can grow and grow and grow to like apply to speak at this conference. Make sure I remember to do that this week.
Yeah. How do you deal with missing goals? You know, I'm sure that in the last year, there are probably some that you had to push back or you just didn't get to. How do you deal with that?
I try to make sort of like a focus of the week. So if I have goals to add or things that I want to do, I try to remember that this week's focus is specifically going to be learning React, for instance. And I can't focus on using this new fancy CSS, post CSS like tool and just writing a next level code while I'm also trying to focus on React. So breaking that up between weeks is really important. Just kind of focusing on one sort of language at a time and diving deep into that and really building up my knowledge on that without all the distraction.
So focus. Focus seems to be a really big part of this. Yeah, and I think it's the thing. I think that especially as a code newbie, it's really tempting to want to try a bunch of different things, right? Like, oh, you need to know React and you need to know Angular, you need to know all these different JavaScript things, and it can be very overwhelming.
Extremely overwhelming, absolutely.
Yeah, and especially because you want to be in the know, right? You want to know the latest thing and really be informed. And so focusing on one and diving in sounds like a good practice.
Yes, it's so important because honestly, there's no way that you can just pick up the internet and download it into your brain yet.
You haven't figured that out yet?
I think that we're working on it. So,
okay. Good. That would be great.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. So another thing that I wanted to talk about is the Open Design Foundation that I believe you are a core member of.
Yep.
Tell me about that.
So it's a group that really tries to bolster design participation in the open source community, which is so, so lacking. And it kind of breaks my heart because I love the open source community and I've had a lot of great experiences working with people in it. But there is this entire segment of tech workers who are completely absent from open source for the most part, and it's designers. So what we're trying to do is figure out how to best mend this relationship between technical developers and visual designers who want to create great open source projects and products and figure out how they can more lucidly work together.
So why is that? Why are designers lacking in the open source community?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. And one of the biggest reasons is sort of how designers are taught to defend their value. Just historically, designers have been told, like, you need to make sure that you're always charging for your work, because if you're not, you're going to be undervalued. And that's, I think, something that we as a society have kind of bestowed upon designers, kind of like giving them that the feeling as though their work is sort of, what's the word? Like, not unnecessary, but like a last step to a process. When really, that's not true. Design isn't just a skin on top of an app. Design is the core of that app. Design is how you think about it from the start. It's how you develop your user story. It can change the entire direction of how your app is going. And so changing those ideas of how people in general view designers, I think, is core in getting more designers involved in doing this kind of work that sort of helps a community rather than always focusing on proving the value of their work.
So I think that's so interesting because I feel like designers get a lot of praise. Like, I feel like designers are the cool kids and the developers are the ones that are less appreciated. Do you feel like there's been a shift where design is more, you know, applauded, or is that just not seeped into the development world?
I think it's funny. I think it has a lot to do with what circles you run in. So, like, as a developer, you always think designers are the cool kids. As a designer, yeah, you always think developers are the cool kids.
Interesting. Yeah.
That could be true. But with design, typically you hear the story of like the hovering art director or the client who had their niece pick this color because she liked bright yellow.
That's true. Yeah.
And in development, you're not going to have your niece redevelop like the core of your app.
That's true. If she could, that'd be very impressive.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Go niece.
I want to meet that niece.
Yeah. Right. Have her on the podcast. Very cool. So it seems like there's this theme in your story around open source. You know, you open source your personal goals. The Open Design Foundation is about open source. Why is open source so special to you?
I feel like it's so important for people to just throw what they're working on out there, just throwing it out there. So specifically with my personal goals, it creates this accountability and transparency, and it even allows for versioning. I feel like with all my code, I always want to throw it out there for people to sort of learn from or to iterate on top of. I remember one time, I think it was 2 months ago, somebody submitted a pull request to my blog, and they fixed some syntax in an API that had changed. So I didn't have to do anything. I just get a fix on my blog because they can see my GitHub source and they can make the change and submit it back to me. And that's so awesome that somebody is willing to just spend their time to make that little fix. Like, those are the sorts of things I love in open source. Another time I made a project called SAS Director, which allows you to copy and paste your manifest file, which is just a list of all of your SAS imports that you break out into individual files. So instead of going through and creating all the folders and the files and then linking them, you just have to sort of direct and say, I want this file here, this file there. Copy paste it, makes a shell script so that you can throw that into your terminal, and it builds all the files out for you. So you don't do it by hand. But 2 days after I put this thing, it was in JavaScript, on the internet, somebody had ported it into a Sublime Text extension. It's now an Atom extension. Somebody turned it into an NPM module. So just having that sort of like community that takes an idea and builds off of it is super, super, super exciting.
Okay, I'm going to be totally honest with you. If someone did that to my work, I think I'd be excited, but I'd also be like, ah, that's my work. Why don't you feel that way? Why? Like, what am I missing? What is it about open source that the excitement of people building off of and incorporating your work outweighs any type of, you know, proprietary feelings you might have about it being your work?
I think that's a really good point that a lot of designers actually have as well when I sort of talk about open source. Like, what? So who owns it? Like, who?
Yeah.
To me, it's not about who owns the work. It's something that you're creating for the internet. And the internet isn't yours or mine. It's ours. It's a thing that we're all building and working on together. And front-end code, you physically can't hide that. You really can't. So there's no point. Like, front-end means open.
That's true. Yeah. I feel like it's really hard to hide the things that you're doing in front-end. I mean, in back-end, you know, you can kind of keep that under wraps, but front-end is a bit harder to do that.
Yeah.
So I personally have heard a lot of not so nice things about the open source community. I've heard that people can be kind of mean, people can be sexist, racist, you know, just generally not nice. But it sounds like you've had a very good experience with open source.
I have. I know that that exists out there. And I've had people make ridiculous comments on some of my repos as well. And for me, at least, the positives have outweighed the negative. By far, but I do know that my experience doesn't invalidate anyone else's experience, and it's really important that we focus on having that kind of communication just eliminated from the internet in general. But specifically in open source projects, I think it's important to have codes of conduct and definitely monitor how people are interacting with each other inside of your projects.
And I think another part of it is many open source projects that people might want to work on are also led by a core team of really senior developers who, you know what they're doing. And I think that for beginners, there's this other layer of, oh, my contribution might not be good and it might be too junior and I can't participate. What advice do you have for a first-time contributor to navigate that world better?
That's really hard. And I'm going to say my advice is going to be at first for those senior developers who are running that repo. There have been studies that have proven that having increased diversity in both gender and tenure in a project improve outcomes of that project because you get the diverse mindsets. You get somebody who doesn't have the same background and the same thinking and the same history of looking at that project as you, and they bring a fresh insight. So those sorts of contributors should be embraced. And so that, I know, doesn't happen that often. But if you show enthusiasm for a project, that's really how you can start to contribute and to become a valuable member of that team. Just submit pull requests. Just start commenting on issues. Just start injecting yourself into the conversation. And don't worry about being wrong. Because if you're wrong, it's not the worst thing in the world. Somebody will maybe correct you, send you a link, and you'll learn something new. It's mm-hmm. so much better to just participate and to contribute.
Yeah. So next, let's do some rapid fire fill in the blanks. Are you ready?
Yes.
Number one, worst advice I've ever received is?
So the worst advice I ever got was from my mom, for sure. mm-hmm. I feel like I have to kind of explain this one.
Yeah.
So my family immigrated to this country in 1990, and I'm Ukrainian. So they didn't really come to this country with the mindset that, oh, I'm moving here for kids to be free and do whatever they want. They came here because they wanted me and my brother to have good, well-paying jobs. Mm-hmm. So to my mother, graphic design
I'm an immigrant. I totally understand.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. So,
it wasn't a real thing. Mm-hmm. So growing up, she convinced me that I had to be an accountant. Like, she told me, like, it's a great office job for a young lady. But it was terrible. Like, I didn't want anything to do with math at that point. So I kind of just didn't – I just did my own thing, and I thought that was the best decision I ever made. So I guess the worst advice was having someone try to dictate my future for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you try to be an accountant?
No, I didn't even apply to the school she wanted me to go to because I was just like a little rebellious child.
Good for you. I'm glad you
worked out fine.
Yeah.
Now they're happy.
Exactly. Now that's what, my parents wanted me to be a doctor. And for many years after I decided not to apply to medical school, they were very upset with me. And just recently, my mom said to me, I'm really glad you didn't listen to us when we told you to be a doctor. And I was like, yes, the ultimate victory.
That is great. The ultimate victory. Nice job.
Mm-hmm. Number two, the first coding project I ever built was?
So the first coding project I ever built was probably my Neopets pet page.
Neopets!
Yes. Complete with a rainbow trailing cursor and all.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, that was fun times. And those HTML pages for how to build Neopets sites are still in existence.
Oh, that's amazing.
Marquee and Blink, a little bit outdated, but they're still up there.
I feel like we need to do a coding throwback session where we just build really old things like that.
I would love it if I could find my Neopets page and just recreate it in like modern HTML.
Oh, that'd be so cool.
That would be so much fun.
If you do end up doing that, please let us know.
Okay, I'll have to find it. But now I have an idea to write down. Maybe I'll put it on my goals list for next week.
There you go. See, we're already helping you out, Ina.
Yeah.
Number three. One thing I wish I knew when I first started to code is?
That nobody really has all of the answers. And it took me years to really realize that. Because when you look at someone else's work, it feels like they are so much smarter than you, always. But it's because you really see their final work and you don't see their struggle. You don't see how they got there. So it's important to remember that nobody knows all the answers and that you probably know more than you think, especially if you're taking time outside of your day-to-day to listen to podcasts and to attend meetups and to educate yourself and work on your career outside of your day job. That means that you're probably a lot further along than you think, or at least you're definitely getting there.
Yeah, I totally agree. And how do you feel about that? Do you like the fact that people don't always know what they're doing? Is that comforting?
I think it's really, really important that people acknowledge that. One of the most sort of formative things that happened with me was one of my first computer, I guess, web design classes. I had an amazing professor, and one of the best things that he told us was, listen, I don't know all the answers. There's this thing called CSS3, and I hear it's cool, and here's a link if you want to learn more. So it really challenges sort of, if we cared, do the research and learn on our own and know that we are not any further behind than our professor who has been doing this for years and years. Things change so quickly. There's always going to be a new toolwork and a new framework for people to use.
You know, I find that comforting, but I also find that frustrating because I like to think that there's someone out there who does actually have all the answers and that person can disseminate, you know, his or her knowledge and brain power to other people. We'll have like local people who know all the answers. I don't like the idea that no one knows the answers.
I think that there are people who are really specialized in certain topics. Like they know all the answers for SVG animation and they're really good at CSS, or they're professionals at, say, like using Angular. But that Angular developer is not nearly that as good at CSS or like React or another thing as another person.
Mm-hmm. So next, let's do some shout outs. Do you have a couple for us?
Shout outs. I would like to do a shout out to my blog, which is just una.im. Mm-hmm. And in that blog, I do write about the whole personal goals repo that I kind of talked about earlier. That's a post from a little while ago. I talk about sort of like learning comprehension. There's lots of blog posts. There's some more technical blog posts that I wrote as well. So I don't know. If you want to check it out, that'd be cool.
Awesome. Anything else?
So one thing that I use that has been really, really great is this Chrome extension called Panda. And it's essentially an RSS reader that you can customize. So right now I have CSS Tricks, Hacker News, and Sidebar. And every time you open a new tab inside of Google Chrome, it pops up. So whenever you open a new tab, you're seeing all these new articles. And that's another great way to sort of find content to learn about.
I'm so glad you picked that. I've been looking for this for so long. And I've only seen it. Yeah, I've only seen it on other designers' Chromes. And every time I think to myself, I need to ask this person what it is that they're using. And I always forget. So I'm really glad that that's your shout out, because now I found it.
Yes, it's awesome. Highly recommend.
Really cool. Yeah. Oh, it's really awesome. I'm gonna install this after this interview. Cool. Anything else?
I could just like list tools forever, but I don't know. If you give me a topic of tools, I could go on and on and on. Something that I recently learned about that I thought was really cool is called Material Theme. Or there's another one called SETI, S-E-T-I, for Sublime Text and also Atom Editor. And it's a really nice theme, but on top of that, it puts a little icon on the side of your files denoting what kind of file it is. So if it's like a SAS file or a Ruby file or like a Markdown file, you can see it like with a little icon. I think it's super helpful.
Oh, that's adorable. Oh, that's really cool. Oh, I see it. Oh, that is helpful.
Yeah, it's nice.
Neat. I feel like it's especially helpful if you have lots of different types of files.
Right.
Which is good. Cool. So I have one sponsor shout out. DigitalOcean's offering the CodeNewbie community a chance to try their cloud hosting service. Use the promo code CodeNewbie and get a $10 credit to get your app up and running. And they've got easy one-click solutions for Django, Rails, and much more. And if you do try it out, let me know. I'd love to hear what you think. Two other shout outs I have, personal shout outs. One is the Noun Project. So going off our design theme for today's podcast episode, they're icons for everything, and they're really good icons. I think you have to pay for most of them, if not all of them, but definitely good for inspiration and kind of getting your juices flowing and what looks good where. So definitely check it out. Another one is Unsplash. So I don't know about you, but I always have a really hard time finding big, nice photos for my heroes and in my header. And it's really annoying. And Unsplash does a really good job of having really, really nice big images. And it's so much better than just, you know, looking at stock images, which are not very good and not very well vetted. But Unsplash does a really great job of finding photos for your website.
Yeah, Unsplash is really nice.
It's really good. And I think there is now a, like someone built an app off of it or built a website off of it that allows, that like categorizes everything. So you can now search for things, which is really nice. And you can subscribe to it and it gives you 10 new photos every day.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, really good stuff. If you want to join the conversation, you can join us on Code Newbie Discourse, our online forum for people excited about code. Or you can chat with us every week on the Code Newbie Twitter chat. Just search for hashtag Code Newbie and tweet with us every Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can learn more about that as well as show notes on this episode at codenewbie.org/podcast. And we recently launched our official Patreon page. So if you're interested in supporting what we do and making this community even better, we'd love for you to donate at patreon.com/codenewbie.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah, please do. If there's a topic you want to hear about or a guest you want to hear from, send us an email, hello@codenewbie.org. Thank you so much, Yuna, for joining us. You want to say goodbye?
Thank you so much for having me, and really just keep on pushing. Sometimes you get stuck in a plateau, but then you learn so much so quickly. So keep on doing what you're doing. Y'all are awesome, and thanks so much for having me on the show.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.